Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
You heard Dick. A new month of Adam's Monthly Nut has arrived. April will feature Righteous Felon Beef Jerky with flavors like Shea Potle Guevara and Habanero Escobar. Expand laces, because who doesn't want to turn every shoe into a slip-on? At least sometimes. You'll also get a copy of Daddy Stop Talking and a bottle of your choice. Prep your mails box, because Adam's Monthly Nut is on its way.
All right, in this episode of Reasonable Doubt, we get into some crazy, wacky California COVID rules. Mark, his audio's a little wanky at the beginning, and then we clear it up, so do not worry. That'll happen pretty quickly. Also, the Chauvin trial, some interesting revelations there, and Project Veritas, and also Weinstein. We get into that situation. Mark got some inside info. First, I'll tell you about LifeLock. Mm-hmm. The joy of tax season, pulling out old receipts, filling out endless forms, trying to get it all submitted by the deadline. The only thing that could make the process worse is if identity thieves got a hold of your tax form with your personal information. When you do your taxes, your professional info is all in one place, getting emailed and shared and possibly exposed to identity thieves. LifeLock monitors uses of your personal info, alerts you to possible suspicious activity. If you become a victim of identity theft, a dedicated U.S.-based specialist will work to fix it. Remember, protect yourself with LifeLock, right, Gary?
That's absolutely right. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock helps you keep what's yours. Join today by going to LifeLock.com/doubt to save up to 25% off your first year. That's LifeLock.com/doubt to save 25% off your first year.
This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. I chose to amend it. Get it on. Welcome to the best hour or so in the universe. It's Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. It's Mark Garagus in New York City. So much to get to. First, a hearty thanks to Mark for flying us out to Nashville. We had a good time.
I heard sold out show, as rumor has it.
Yeah, and his boy Jake came out with his buds, and we brought him out to the show that night, and it was a grand time had by all.
But fantastic. Do you enjoy Big Boy?
Oh, my God. What kind of plane is Big Boy?
It's a Gulfstream 4SP. Of all the jets I've ever flown, it's my favorite.
Oh, my God. It was so great. And then the next morning, bam, right to the back of the Southwest flight.
And for those who don't believe, Adam actually sent me a picture from what looked like middle row, three seats crammed in there. If you were to believe that the CDC, it would be a COVID breeding ground, right?
It was literally, 200 people in a space is big as a dining car of a train. Essentially, it's the exact opposite of all CDC protocol. It's so we live in a world where you can't play a theater in Nashville because it's half capacity. Movie theaters like the Arclight Cinema, Cinerama Dome, these places have all gone under over here because it's zero capacity. And then you put everyone into a cigar tube, 200 people. You know, the comedy of it is, when they give the announcement about deplaning, they tell you to keep a social distance when you deplane. So they take 200 people, they put them on each other's laps for 3 hours, and then they expect to give you 6 feet when you're walking off the plane. It's all theater.
Well, L.A. County just issued their new guidance, and there's so many other things I want to talk about, but I thought it was hilarious. They now have instructed restaurants that you have to have a vaccinated-only section. Okay, did you know this?
No.
And you have to ask people for their proof of vaccination, by the way, which is a HIPAA violation. Leave it to L.A. County to see if they can get the trifecta. And my favorite part of inanity by the L.A. County Board of Health, you can have TVs on outside, not inside, okay? And you can't have live music, DJ, or anything else outside. So our solution is going to be, I'm going to have the band play down the street at the homeless encampment, and I'll have somebody film it there, and we'll broadcast it onto the TV, and then we'll be perfect, because the band will be exempt because they're at the homeless encampment. It won't be live music, but it'll be on a screen outside because we can't do it inside. This is just, at some point, somebody is going to say to themselves, we have so jumped the shark, but apparently in Los Angeles County, there isn't a judge that, other than Judge Chalfant and Judge Mooney, there isn't a judge who actually wants to not abdicate under the California COVID exception to the Constitution.
Well, it makes you feel like you're taking crazy pills if you're doing what we did, because I went from Mark's private jet in Nashville, landed in Nashville, went straight to the Daily Wire, Ben Shapiro's place. Place was a beehive of activity. Nobody masked. Did Candace Owens' show. She did my show. Off to Zany's that night, played a packed house at Zany's. No mask, no social distancing, no nothing. After Zany's went out and indoors to a packed steakhouse that night, the next morning drove to the airport, more beehive of activity, and got on a packed Southwest flight, flew that to Florida, jumped in a car, went to Tucker Carlson's place, knocked out a thing, back to the Tampa airport, and then back to a packed airport in a packed house. And when I landed last night in LAX at, 11 at night, it was more crowded than I've ever seen it in my entire life. The whole horseshoe there, the cars, it was taking 20 minutes to do a full loop if you passed your pickup. It was a madhouse last night at 11:30 at night. So that's what's going on at LAX. But if you'd like to eat down the street, or see a movie, or listen to some music, or watch sports on a TV, now it's a completely and utterly different set of rules. And as I always say, the most socially undistanced place in the world is the baggage carousel at LAX. Everyone gathers around it. They're five people deep. There's hundreds of people all standing in the circle looking for their Samsonite. Why don't they break that up? Why is that totally acceptable, but you can't have a TV on inside your sports bar?
You can't have a TV on indoors, and you can't have a DJ outdoors, and God forbid that you employ street musicians. I thought I was doing a good thing. You want to create a little community and reward them, and everybody was distanced, and no, they're going to eliminate that too. And Dr. Fauci, bless his heart, I tweeted something. There was an article where he admitted that it's inexplicable to him. I forget the exact quote, but it was that he wasn't seeing the ramifications that he should see in an area that has been unmasked that he would have expected to see.
The exact quote, because I remember it, was maybe they're doing things outdoors.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought
isn't that astonishing? After a year, we figured out that what we were talking about a year ago, the ridiculous theater on the horse trail as we're walking outdoors. Now the science is starting to come around to, hey, maybe there is something to this.
Well, there's two ways to look at it. You say the science is coming around. Like I said, when I was doing that show, The Doctors, and I said, why did they ever shut down the beaches? Why did they shut down the volleyball courts at the beach? Why did they arrest guys that were paddleboarding? And they said, well, the science wasn't settled yet. I'm like, If you dipshits don't know that's safe in a pandemic, then fucking it's time to eat a bullet. Don't tell me you didn't know. You never thought it was dangerous. That's my point. They wanted to lock you down and they wanted to control you. They didn't think 7 months ago. Experts in a pandemic never thought it was dangerous to walk on the beach.
Let me explain something that's a good segue into Chauvin. We talked about this too, at least a year ago. That all of this just reminds me of what happens in a courtroom. You get these experts up here who will, if you put them on direct, they will parrot whatever position the person who's paying them or is calling them will ask, and you'll get that, just like in the Chauvin trial, whether it was defense or prosecution. So they can always find an expert who's going to say and read from whatever script. You won't ever get to the truth unless you engage in a little cross-examination of an expert. And you will very quickly find that the expert in 90% of the cases is full of shit. And because you will see that they've got a hypothesis or they've got something that they're trying to show and they're trying to deal with their taskmaster or their paymaster. And it inevitably will unwind under a cross-examination. And whatever side you're on, it doesn't matter. You will see that the last thing, you know, the takeaway from that and what jurors a lot of times do is jurors say a pox on both your houses when they get these competing experts. Because they realize it's just some person who has studied one niche of one area of academia. And then they become qualified as an expert. And, you know, there's a whole movement. This is the kind of also fundamental schizophrenia about what's happened during the last year. Judges, for the last 20 years, there's been this movement, post-Daubert, California, it's Sargon. It's for judges to act as the gatekeepers for junk science, right? That's been a movement that I've watched over the course of my career, that they, the judges are not going to accept these paid experts and things like that. And then the irony of these so-called experts getting complete deference under rational basis, getting complete deference in a COVID environment to make these life and death decisions and to make basically to have to destroy the economy is mind-boggling.
Yeah, so in this scenario, I should say, Eric Garcetti would be the client and be cutting the checks, and Barbara Ferrer would be the expert, and then she's going to get up there and just do his bidding, and she should be able to get crossed. That's
in fact, I would go one step farther. I would say, Judge, I want to do a voir dire on this witness as to the foundational requirements for this witness to qualify as an expert. You have to meet certain foundational legal requirements for a person to be an expert. She doesn't meet them. First of all, are you an MD? No. Second of all, are you an epidemiologist? No. Have you done any independent studies? No. Have you done a correlation study? No. Have you done a blind study versus any other? No. Have you made any analysis or done any kind of CDC analysis on any kind of comparison? No. Your Honor, I would proffer it's not an expert. Her opinion shouldn't be used. And in a normal world, in a rational pre-COVID constitutional world, none of these people would be accepted as experts for the most part.
Well, and then so the people that are supposed to be conducting the cross-examination are the media. Now you have the media who's now taking the expert side and the client side, and that is a very lethal combination. That essentially means the citizens aren't represented at this point. We don't have legal representation. If the media is going to join the so-called expert, who's really not an expert, with the person who's cutting the checks, meaning the mayor in this analogy, then who represents, who is the attorney for the people?
Well, we've been fighting these things. I mean, I don't even know how many lawsuits we filed. We're going to file another one today. But the judicial abdication. And I don't use this loosely because, you know, my reverence for the legal system is substantial. I have a great deal of reverence for jury trial and reverence for judges, but the judges have basically, for the most part, especially at the appellate level, have just decided they're going to completely abdicate their role as a check or balance on the executive. And it's astonishing. I never thought I would be sitting here with you embracing the 5-4 or 6-3 U.S. Supreme Court as the last bastion of rationality. But that's where we are in America. It's a sorry state of affairs.
All right, let me take care of a little housekeeping here, and then we'll get on to the Chauvin trial. Let me give you a word from our friends at Astera.com. This podcast is sponsored by Astera Labs. Thought about trying CBD but didn't know what brand or dosage form is best? Astera Labs. Easy-to-swallow tablets that provide consistent dosing and blister packaging that allows for convenient transport. Manufactured according to the FDA's current good manufacturing practices in a facility that is GMP compliant and tested by a third-party lab to ensure compliance. Astera Labs only uses pharmaceutical-grade ingredients on their tablets, zero THC, made in the USA, and their unscented body cream has aloe, sunflower oil, and shea butter to protect and moisturize the skin as well. It's Astera Labs. Right, Gary?
Try Astera Labs safe quality CBD products by shopping at AsteraLabs.com. That's AsteraLabs.com. And use code RD20 to receive 20% off your order today.
All right, Mark.
Okay, so interestingly, in the Chauvin case yesterday, they rested both the prosecution and defense. The judge gave a little admonition to the jury that basically said, when you're packing for next week, because you're going to be sequestered in a hotel, plan for long, hope for short. But what ended up being lost in that was that the judge came very close to declaring a mistrial, which would have meant that they'd have to start all over again yesterday. And the reason for that was when the defense put up the doctor from Maryland, who I believe was Dr. Fowler. He testified that the exhaust from the gas engine of the patrol car, and they used, you'll love this, Adam, they used the California Air Resources Board statistics, that carbon monoxide could have been a contributing factor. And the prosecution was somewhat snarky with the witness about it. And then they brought what is called a rebuttal witness, which was actually a witness who had already testified, to get up there to debunk that. The problem was that they then produced yesterday, we're taping this on Friday, they produced for the first time evidence that the prosecution had in fact already tested for carbon monoxide because they believed, or somebody believed, that that may have been a contributing factor. And they never turned that over to the defense. And then, to add insult to injury, the prosecution made the argument, well, we didn't have possession of it. The medical examiner did, or it was with the medical records. And the judge was having none of it. And this is where I give him a lot of credit. It's been the law, U.S. Supreme Court law, for almost 25 years, from a case called Kyles v. Whitley. You can't just say, oh, some other department had it. They're part of the prosecution team, and you can't dump it on the defense at the end. So the judge admonishes them, if you even go near there, I'm going to declare a mistrial, because the defense was objecting. The defense was not requesting a mistrial. And sure enough, prosecutor, like a kid with a hot stove, goes there. Judge admonishes them. But my takeaway from this is Eric Nelson either is setting up an IAC defense, ineffective assistance of counsel, or he likes what he sees in that jury. Because if I'm the defense lawyer there and I think I'm losing, I'm going full bore all the way out on a mistrial. Because if I think my client's about to get hammered and I know that he's not going to take the stand, there's no reason not to go for a mistrial at that point. I'm flummoxed as to why they didn't push for one from the defense.
Well, there's only one reason. I mean, he has all the info you have as an attorney, so probably doesn't have two airplanes, but he definitely has the info. So he's no good to me is what I'm saying, so I don't care what he does with this trial. I'm not kissing his ass. But he must feel like he's got a good hand. Now, I mean, all you can say, I guess, is you're looking at your cards, right? You're seeing three of a kind. The guy sitting across from you could have a royal flush. We don't know. But if you have three of a kind, you're not folding. You're not trying to fold the game, right? I mean, it doesn't guarantee that there's not royal flushes and straights and everything on the other side of the table. But with your three of a kind, you like your chances. Is that a good analogy?
Yeah, like I say, he's the one who's in there. He's the one on the ground. He's the one who's watching the jury. I'm doing my speculative analysis from afar. I'm not in that courtroom, but it's astonishing to me, although I've had this issue before with other lawyers. I remember trying a murder case maybe 15 years ago with a lawyer who will remain nameless, and he and I got into it because I was pushing for a mistrial on an issue, same issue that almost always comes up. Prosecutors always don't turn over exculpatory material, and you only find it out when you're, you know, when you get a witness on the stand and then the witness testifies to it. And my co-counsel did not want the mistrial. And I said, look, what's your best result in this case? You think you're going to get an acquittal? Because I don't. And he says, no, I think I'm going to get a hung jury. I said, well, what happens after a hung jury? He says, a mistrial. I said, so why are we going to wait and roll the dice? Let's go for the mistrial now. We've got the grounds for it. We've got the right to it. Push for it now as opposed to waiting for the hung jury and taking your chances. Because clearly, although I've had judges, I actually had to go to the Court of Appeal in the Fifth District in California once because a judge did not understand that a hung jury was better for the defendant than a guilty verdict. I mean, I actually had to go on appeal for that. I was telling the judge, am I in a different universe where you don't understand that a hung jury is better for the defendant than a guilty? But anyway, we had to get a Court of Appeal ruling on that. But that is the only thing that I can think of, that this guy thinks that he's got a hung jury coming, and that's the reason he's not pushing for a mistrial. Because boy, Judge Cahill was lit yesterday. If you watch the video,
why does the prosecution get to put up their own expert during the defense's case?
It's kind of the rebuttal. So the defense says, okay, that we're not calling any more witnesses. And then the prosecution gets, because they've got the burden of proof, they get to put up rebuttal. And their rebuttal was basically to call a witness they called before to opine on this newly discovered evidence, which was not newly discovered. It was in their possession. They should have turned it over a long time ago. And by the way, the argument was by the defense, hey, that snarky cross-examination you did of our expert wasn't so snarky, or it wasn't so ridiculous, because you people obviously considered it when you tested in your panel of tests and blood tests of Mr. Floyd when you were looking for markers that would have been consistent with carbon monoxide poisoning.
Was there any carbon monoxide found?
Yeah, there was. The judge wasn't going to allow them to speculate this, that, or the other, but I will tell you, I would have my argument would have been, if I was on the defense, to say, judge, I'm not willing to accept their testing. I'm not willing to accept anything they tell me. I need a blood split. I need to do the blood split. Means they have to save it, a portion of the blood. I would have sent it out to my expert or lab to have done it myself. I mean, they, you know, that's the argument. You can't just turn over exculpatory information, Brady style material, and violate a longstanding U.S. Supreme Court law. By the way, in California, there's a case in Ray Brown that is almost on all fours, where the Orange County District Attorney basically said, oh, the coroner's not part of our team, and the California Supreme Court said, time out. Yes, they are. That is part of your team. You can't hide behind me. I didn't go and get all of my information. So it's exasperating because it happens again and again in every trial. And I do not understand why in this day and age, why we haven't reached a point in the criminal justice system. And mind you, just because you hate Derek Chauvin, just because you hate law enforcement, does not mean that the same rules shouldn't apply. Because if you start making exceptions for people you hate, it's going to come back and boomerang, just like it did in this case, where when there was a person who killed a cop, who was in back in 1985, they allowed spark of life evidence in Minnesota, the only jurisdiction that allows it. And now that's the law, and it's used against a cop who's charged with killing somebody else. It always, that's the way the law works. You know, you may like how you're getting, reminds me of packing the court with the Democrats. You do it today, but when the other side gets around to it, then you cry bloody murder on the for doing it. So be careful what you wish for, because when you don't have all the cards, it's going to come back and you're going to have to deal with it.
What does it do overall inside the courtroom as someone who's been there, probably may have been on both sides of this equation for so many years, when the jury sees that one side, prosecution or other defense, but mostly prosecution, I guess, when they see that they're trying to sneak something in or do something a little underhanded and they get admonished, what does that do to the jury? Do they think that maybe those guys aren't playing square, or does it bring into question other things they've said? You know, because now you just kind of caught a guy with his hand in the cookie jar, and he's saying, all right, forget about that, but believe everything else, because everything else is above the board. Does it taint it a little bit in the jurors'
mind? It does, and we're living in a different era now than we were a year, 2 years, 5 years ago. There was a case, you know, I've talked about it before, Leon Rosby, a case I tried where he was charged with originally 9 felonies because he was like one of the original guys who used to go and film the police in Hawthorne, who was using battering rams and everything else, the militarized kinds of equipment, and they ended up shooting his dog, and that wasn't bad enough. They then had to make him go to a jury trial on felony cases. We showed during the trial that they had played hide the ball, and they were the cops were dirty in that case, or at the very least, the cops were not doing what they should have done. And the jury took it out on them, and rightfully so. The problem is, in a different era, people come in and they assume that the prosecutor is the guy wearing the white hat. They assume that prosecutors, you know, how many times I've heard prosecutors talk about cops and say, oh, they're here to protect and serve. What motive would the cop have to lie or to try to convict somebody? Well, we know that there's plenty of motive, but that wasn't the case 10 years ago, 5 years ago. It's only in recent years that people have started to come to the realization that, yes, that it may not be to protect and serve. In some cases, it may be to arrest and convict, should be the motto.
All right, let me tease this. So the jury, they've rested, the prosecution has rested its case, right? The defense
has rested. Monday morning will be the closing arguments.
So the question I'll tease is, what does a fast verdict mean versus a long, drawn-out deliberation? I'll tease that first, and which side is rooting for which version of that. First, I'll tell you about Audible, leading provider of spoken word entertainment, largest selection of audiobooks, bestsellers, celebrity memoirs, languages, business, motivation, and more. Listen while working from home, cooking, exercising, walking the dog, or just relaxing. As a member, you get one credit every month, good for any title to keep forever in your Audible library. I recommend Mistrial. Yeah. Or one of
my books. Awesome Dawson.
Awesome Dawson narrates and voices. Or you can get one of my many books as well, which I do the narration of. Plus, there's podcasts, wellness programs, theatrical performances, comedy, and exclusive Audible originals as well. New members can try Audible for 30 days on us. Visit audible.com/RD or text RD to 500-500. That's audible.com/RD or text RD to 500-500 and try it out for free. All right. So what does a long deliberation versus a short turnaround mean?
Well, it depends on the case. In this case, I'm going to venture to say a quick verdict, is probably unlike most cases, is a prosecution verdict. A drawn out deliberation probably favors the defense. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But if it's a quick verdict, it means that they've dispensed with the mens rea, the mental intent or gross negligence aspects of this, and they've gone and moved directly to and dispensed also with causation. If it's drawn out, it means somebody is taking the position that causation is an issue or the mens rea, meaning the mental intent, is an issue. Because the difference, they've got to make fine distinctions between second and third degree murder and between murder and manslaughter. And that could take some time, although it's a lot easier for them if they find that, hey, this is a second degree murder all day long under the jury instructions. And by the way, we'll deal with this on Tuesday on Beyond, because the judge is going to issue those. And we'll talk about what they could be talking about. I do not think that they will come back on Monday if they start to deliberate on Monday. I think that they're going to want to have a fulsome, engaged deliberation. They know the world is focused on them. They know that people are hanging on their decision. And that, you have to understand, these jurors take, for the most part, take their jury service extremely seriously. So I think they will, and I remember back to the OJ trial, there was some discussion there as to whether or not they wanted to hold back rather than come back with a quick verdict. And jurors think about those things. Trials I've had that were high-profile jurors said they waited and didn't want to come back too quickly on a not guilty because they didn't want it to look like they were, that they had an agenda.
I did that when I was asked to produce a sperm sample once. I thought
I never thought of that connection, but thank you, Adam.
Yeah, I didn't want to come out back in 45 seconds, hand a guy a tumbler. I thought,
that was the fear of humiliation.
That's right. So, all right, on to the Weinstein situation. You have some breaking news,
This is very interesting this week. They had a hearing on his extradition this week. And it was televised, and it really is it tickled me. The LA County DA is trying to extradite Mr. Weinstein from New York. He has a lawyer in LA, that I've known for many years and tried jury trials with, Mark Worksman. Mark's partner is Alan Jackson, who you may remember, Adam, did the Kevin Spacey case, mm-hmm. got that case dismissed back in Massachusetts. Alan's also married to a Kasabian, ironically enough. So they're there. And I wish I could remember his name. Maybe Gary's got it because he does need to get a shout out. Harvey's got a lawyer in upstate New York who's I think he's 82 years old. He's been practicing for 50 years. And the reason I'm so tickled is the LA County DA thought, we're going to get an extradition. They're leaving it up to the Erie County DA. And the Erie County DA, which is, I assume, where the prison is that Harvey is housed, they get up there and they think they're going to have a very routine hearing in order to ship Harvey Weinstein back. Because generally an extradition is there a valid charging document from the requesting jurisdiction? And do you have the identification of the person who is charged? Right? Simple two questions.
Norman Effman.
Perfect. Norman gets our star lawyer of the week. Norman figures out that the extradition documents are based on a complaint that was filed by the LA County DA. There's only one problem. Since that complaint, they've issued an under seal indictment, and the under seal in Los Angeles. Under seal indictment was not on the extradition papers. Norman raises that issue, and the Erie County judge says, well, that's a pretty good issue. I want to hear a briefing on it, and kicked it down the road to April 30th. So they've got a new hearing then. Erie County DA was apparently miffed and held a press conference and said he felt like he was sandbagged. I love how it's always, we feel like we were sandbagged. Why? Because he didn't do it right. And the LA County DA, and I know a lot of DAs listen to our show, I guess they were frustrated because they were on the Zoom hearing, but apparently were not dialed in so they could make any arguments. So you're sitting there screaming at your screen if you're the LA County DA, as this 82-year-old has just bedeviled you on a legal issue in Erie County, and the Erie County DA is sitting there going, what the hell just happened to us? But kick the can down the road, he's going to take a writ, and that's where we stand. There, Harvey lives to fight another day in from New York.
Project Veritas. This is a story that I'm sort of aware of that Gary brought up just before the show. They were recording some employees of CNN. CNN was Project Veritas is this guy named O'Keefe, I think his name is.
James, correct.
James O'Keefe. And he just goes around and finds guys from the left and gets them to say what we already kind of know is true. Essentially, he just gets verification of it. Like, he'll get some CNN guy and he'll go, oh, we're trying to bury Trump. We're trying to cobble together any story. We didn't care if it was true or not. We just want to get rid of Trump. And it's kind of what, if you've been paying attention, you know already, but he gets them to, he secretly films them and then he puts it out.
Yeah, in this instance, I believe there was a woman who went on a few Tinder dates with a producer for CNN, and she was recording the dates as they sort of discussed his job.
Right.
And then did he get suspended from Twitter for this?
Yes, or Facebook or something.
From Twitter, yeah, absolutely. And the allegation that Twitter is using is that he had fake accounts that he was using to game their system, and he's vowed to file a lawsuit on Monday, Section 230, be damned.
So I'm very interested in this issue, not the least of which, I mean, as I often do on this show, I disclose that my political leanings are probably on the other side, but, you know, free speech means something, or it used to before the COVID Constitution. The COVID Constitution has really turned the world on its head, I'll tell you. And I'll do some more research on this. If he files on Monday, maybe on Beyond on Tuesday, we'll have a full segment on this and we can delve into what the odds are on the lawsuit. He said he's going to file on Monday, didn't he, Gary?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Yes. So
we'll tease it for Beyond on Tuesday.
So what do you think, not this case per se, but there's a lot of stories about Jason Whitlock, the sports writer, forwarded a article or text or blog or something about one of the leaders from Black Lives Matters, and she bought a bunch of houses, and he just put it out there calling her a hypocrite because she says she's a socialist and she bought these four houses and blah, blah, blah. And they canceled his Twitter account. They reinstated it a week later, whatever. But there's a lot of canceling of stuff we don't like on Twitter, and it all seems to be pointed one direction.
Well, you know what's interesting about that? It's funny you say that. There was an article this morning that I read, I forget the publication, but was very interesting to me. And it was by a woman who's a professor who delves into the jury work, and was very interesting because she mentioned in the article a case called People versus Silas, which I was unaware of. So I went and I looked at the case. People versus Silas is a case where the prosecution in California was asking questions of potential jurors about Black Lives Matter. And it's up on appeal now in, I believe the, well, I know it's the Court of Appeal for California, but interestingly, Javier Becerra, who was the attorney general then, was fighting the defense and all kinds of amicus, friends of the court briefs, who were arguing that the way Black Lives Matter was being questioned by the prosecution was itself racist. And Becerra was taking a position contrary to that, at least his office was as attorney general. And now to hear this, when that's over there, that's another thing I'm going to delve into for Tuesday, because it's an interesting world we live in where you can take positions that are seemingly completely contradictory and punish somebody's speech in one area but not another.
Well, it seems to me, just from seeing which way the wind is blowing and big tech, what they're doing right now is they're saying we're an open public forum that just wants to hear a variety of ideas. And we're not here to vet the ideas unless they're dangerous or negligent or something. Other than that, we don't have an allegiance. It's an open forum. Right. So if you want to send a tweet out that says triple masking is good, they're not going to flag that. But if you want to send something out that says ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and zinc are good, they're going to flag it. So just taking just the subject of COVID-19, just the pandemic itself, they left everyone alone who was in Team Fauci and Team Biden and everyone on the left that was prolonged lockdowns. You know, you can get this, your cat can get this disease from the Grubhub guy. All the misinformation, all of it, they left it all alone. If anyone came out and pushed back against that information, they flagged them. So what they did with COVID is essentially what they're doing with politics. Hunter Biden, no, he's not going to, we're not going to let them put the article on his laptop out from the Washington, whatever. But if Trump farted on a gravestone at Arlington, that's a legitimate story, and we're going to push that out there. So it's now become clear who they are. And the question is, and that, by the way, that's fine. You know, we have churches and we have pagan churches and we have Christianity and we have Mormons and we have Judaism. Like, that's fine. To me, they're declaring a major. And when they declare a major, then Congress needs to get involved, because it's no longer this free and open exchange of ideas. It's pointed and it has a direction.
I think it's also worth pointing out that more so than any other social media giant, for the longest time, Twitter was the most open. You can post videos and pictures of hardcore pornography, and that is within their terms of service. So they, for the longest time, were an anything goes company, more so than a Facebook or an Instagram. But lately, that has certainly been changing.
Well, the assault on speech is astonishing to me, because just because you don't like the speech does not make it something that's prohibited. And I just don't understand it. It doesn't matter if it's right-wing speech or left-wing speech. It's speech as long as it's within the bandwidth of what is permissible. And that's troubling.
Yeah. So at some point, adjustments, to me, there's two adjustments that need to be made. Either they need to sort of back off on their political direction, or again, just something like COVID. You know, we'll hear from both sides versus.
Well, I've sued and had 230 thrown in my face when I was suing for things that people like. Or endorse from my side of the spectrum. I can think of one case in particular where I would be championed for that, but ran headlong into 230. Now, when it's the opposite person, it's that sword and shield kind of a thing. And people should take a step back and analyze it and understand that you're not
trying to get into an echo chamber. You're trying to get into a diverse marketplace of ideas.
Agreed. All right. You can subscribe to Reasonable Doubt's YouTube channel, youtube.com/Reasonable Doubt Podcast. Free podcasts and Beyond of Reasonable Doubt coming Tuesday.
Absolutely. And that's the only place that you can watch the Beyond episodes.
All right. You can go to adamcroll.com for all my live shows. Let me just hit Geico real quick here. Do you own, do you rent your home? Will you do one or the other? How about you get your bundles going at geico.com? You take your homeowners or your renter's insurance, put it together with the automotive policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save when you get your bundles going at geico.com. That is geico.com. What do you got, Mark?
Well, look, if you're in New York City, stop by Grand Central Terminal. Prova Pizza is there and thriving. Go by Moxie Hotel in Times Square. Same thing there, although we may have a change coming soon there. Capri will be opening at the end of this month. V Palm Springs is going strong. Gigi's Restaurant is open now, 7 days a week. Stop by there or get a resort pass for the pool. Engine Company 28, come by. You can watch TV outside. You can't watch live music. And if you want to comply with Barbara Ferrar, you have to have a vaccinated only section. So bring your vaccination card, even though that's a HIPAA violation. So go around the corner to 10E Mediterranean Tapas, and maybe Barbara Ferrar will let us operate in some fashion that complies with the law.
So, until next time, Adam Kroll for Mark Garagos saying, mahala.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.
Well, do you own, do you rent your home? Probably do one or the other. And then you got your automotive policy. How about you bundle them up at Geico? Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners and renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing because you got so much to do already. So go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save when you get your bundle on with Geico. That is geico.com.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts, ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.